You're listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, Company Culture Coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This season is sponsored by Semco Style UK. The Semco Style framework is a practical approach which helps organizations create a human-centered workplace and brings a proven method to enable you to shape how people experience work. Whether you're looking to transform your business for success, become more resilient to the challenges of an ever-changing world, or create a culture that delivers more engaged people, the Semco Style methodology can help you on your way. Are you ready to discover the tools to transform your organization? Visit semcostyle.co.uk. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Make It Thrive. I'd like to start by saying a big thank you to those of you who have recently connected with me on LinkedIn and shared how you're enjoying the podcast. I can't begin to say how much that means to me, and it's so lovely to be able to put faces to those of you listening. So thank you so much. I'd also like to welcome any suggestions on what you want to hear more about on the podcast. While this space is often a place for me to explore my curiosities and get to chat with my peers in the world of work, I also want to ensure that this podcast offers you something to take away. Whether it's a practice you can play with or a new idea that sparks a change, let me know what you want to hear more of and I can see what I can find. On today's episode, I'm joined by Mark Edelston. Those of you who are deep into the world of progressive ways of working will have very much heard of Mark before. Mark labels himself as a new ways of working nerd, consultant, facilitator, and trainer. And for years, he's been practicing progressive ways of working whilst amounting all of that mountain of information and creating super useful resources. Mark came across new ways of working in New Zealand in 2015 after spending a frustrating decade in traditional workplaces. I think we've all been there. It was the first time that he had found consistent fulfillment in work in this beautiful and challenging experience. And it's an organization, a law firm and community that features on the Distinguished Corporate Rebels bucket list as well. So do go check that out. Of course, once you have a taste of this way of working, as Mark says, it's impossible to go back. And now Mark has been a team member in three organizations that embraced progressive ways of working and have supported many on their journeys. And Mark has been on my list on the podcast for a while now, as I'm a big fan of his playbook and for the way he constantly asks the big questions about new ways of working. So I really am a big fan of Mark's work. So today, Mark and I are going to chat about patterns found in progressive organizations, complexity, and the inspiration for his playbook. So let's get started. Hi, Mark, and thank you so much for joining me on Make It Thrive.
Hey, Lizzie, thank you so much for having me.
I must admit that you have been on my list for a while now, because for a while I was secretly stalking you on Twitter. Because we're kind of part of the same, new ways of working kind of arena. And I'd heard your name mentioned in so many different groups or communities, and I'd seen some of your work, but I just never got the kind of the guts maybe to outreach to you. So I'm so glad that we've finally made a connection.
Yeah, and we had a lovely chat, didn't we, in coffee?
Yeah, virtual coffee.
When you did that. So thank you for reaching out.
It's okay.
Yeah. Great to be here.
It's one of those things where, as well, you know, there are so many people in that kind of, arena of community of work and looking at different ways of working and sort of progressive alternative ways of doing things. And sometimes it's just, you know, you never really know like what people's personas are going to be like. You know what they always say, don't meet your idols. it's one of those where you're like, is this a moment where I shouldn't meet my idols? But everyone, I can safely say, everyone who I've ever outreached to in our community of alternative work has always been just the most generous and humble, lovely people. So yeah, I feel really grateful that we're in this space together.
Yeah, it is a friendly pool to be swimming in, isn't it? I've had exactly that same experience.
Yeah, and there's just such a vibe of kind of helping each other. And, you know, it's something that, you know, when you're doing this type of work and it is, you know, different to what people are used to, you'd come up against sort of different challenges and things like that. And having that community to kind of put those challenges into and kind of explore together feels so nice, especially, you know, I'm just solo little old Lizzie working in Liberty Mind, and so I don't have a team to kind of lean on for some of these things. So having that community is really powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was really grateful for it when I first kind of entered this world. So I had, yeah, I guess I've been working in organizations that were very much experimenting with new ways of working or self-management and things like that. And then I found myself working alone, and to be able to reach out and have positive, warm and friendly responses from all of these names, you know, authors and kind of celebs of our world, if you will. Yeah. And each time I reached out to them, they were like, yeah, sure, let's have a coffee. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that obviously, I mean, for so long you've been working in this world, Mark. You know, I kind of see you as one of the wisdoms of our sort of new ways of working. And you've been in this world for such a long time, kind of looking at these progressive organizations. And people, you know, they might have heard of some of the things that they're doing and some of the practices that they're playing with. But I'd love to know, what do you see emerging most of all from some of these progressive organizations?
I guess what I'm seeing, I'm kind of aware that what I see might be different to what other people see. And if you'd have asked me a few years ago, I'd probably have gone on I've spoken a lot about self-management. What I see now, or where my interest is now, is more so in the patterns that you find in progressive organizations, and not and less so in any one kind of label, you know. So not so much agile or self-management. Of course, borrow from them, because they are you know, they're great things. I'm lucky to have worked in a couple of self-managing organizations, and I loved it. I thought it was the answer, and I think it can be the answer for many organizations, but I don't think, and of course, you know, it's not one size fits all, is it? So sadly, we can't all swallow a self-management pill and work happily ever after. I can, but I've met many people for whom it really doesn't work. It doesn't suit them. So I think, yeah, less so than any kind of emerging trend, I'm really, really increasingly interested in the patterns.
I am intrigued, because obviously, a lot of the time when people think about progressive work, they do think about lean or agile or self-management, and they're kind of like the poster children of kind of progressive work. And that's what gets spoken about a lot of the time. So I'd love for you to delve into those patterns. You know, what are they? And is it something that perhaps an organization that thinks that, you know, self-management is perhaps too far one way, is it something that can be adopted by any organization?
I think so. Yeah, I really think that focusing on those patterns is something that all organizations can do, whereas transitioning to self-management is something that some organizations can do. And ditto agile, you know. Agile's great if you're in product and software development, and take it out of that context, and it's hit and miss. I mean, you could even say it's hit and miss in the world of software development, because it's, yeah, there's so much going on in that world now, isn't it? You know, LinkedIn feels like agile wars sometimes, or at least the people that I follow. Whereas the patterns, And you know, if you could have another person on your podcast next week and ask them the patterns, and they'll probably, I think there would be some shared patterns, but they would maybe pick some different ones. So these are very much my my take. It's not gospel. But I kind of went for, I'll start with the three, what I often refer to as the three pillars of self-management, of new ways of working. So for these three, I think if you imagine a dial and make each three of these a bit better, just turn it up one point or a couple of points, and make your meetings healthier. Ooh. Grow a culture of feedback and distribute your decisions. So focusing on those three, I think if most teams were to pay some attention to them, because most teams find frustration in those things.
Yeah.
From what I've seen with teams that focus on that, then you do experience some gains. Now the other ones, so kind of having clarity around roles, and having certain agreements, you know, this is how we work as a team, this is how we do things around here, and conflict, that was the sixth. So yeah, meetings, feedback, decision making, roles, agreements, and conflict, because you know, conflict's going to happen, so let's figure out what do we do when it happens, because it will.
Yeah.
And then there's a few more in the playbook that I released a few months ago. So psychological safety for sure. Coaching, mindset, and a focus on great teamwork would be, I think, the ones that I see progressive organizations paying a lot of attention to. Now, of course, not all at once, and some organizations might already have an awesome culture of feedback, or they might already experiment or kind of use the advice process to make decisions or consent decision making. But I'm sure out of that list, there would be room for improvement in some areas. Yeah. So yeah, I really think it's a great idea to kind of focus on those, rather than kind of aiming for, you know, some to arrive at self-management. Per se. I mean, you might want to do that. If the whole organization agrees that that's where we want to be heading, then great, go for it. If there isn't that agreement, then I'm sure in your teams that you could find one of those patterns that is causing some frustration. So just kind of chip away at that, make it a little better, and kind of run experiments.
And in terms of how would you tell people to approach these patterns? So in terms of those dials, which I love that analogy, by the way, that's something I always say, like just turn the dial up on something. Would you say to people, okay, start with something that you're already doing, you think you're doing well at, and make that better? Or would you say to someone, maybe start somewhere that's completely new and try and experiment? What would you often recommend to people when they hear of those patterns and they think, oh, we need to explore with some of these? Where do we start?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to, I've taken inspiration from Brave New Work in this, and they recommend through their tension and practice cards, which I find a really useful tool to, start where the tension is. So if you were to kind of have a look through the playbook and then those patterns, maybe it's a lack of clarity around the roles in your team that is causing a little tension. And so just kind of go for wherever's, you know, what is it that's annoying you? Oh, it annoys me that we have too many meetings, or they're so long, or they're so boring, or only the same voices talk, or I'm showing up to meetings and I don't say a thing. What is the point? Start where that challenge is, and with what's annoying you. Another common one. So I work through this on the course that I run, and I think most commonly it's meetings and decision making that people bring up as a challenge. So, only only top brass get to call the shots, and they're making decisions that impact on me and on my team. But they weren't best placed to make them because they don't have the, you know, they're further away from the information. They don't have the expertise or the insight that we have. So that'll be annoying. So I always ask them, what's annoying you? Or what would you love to make a little bit better? What would make your life at work easier? And start there.
Love
so
that.
In the playbook, each pattern has a section on theory and then also a section on practice. So if, let's say, you know, if you're really craving feedback, or if you wish you were able to deliver feedback a little better, because it's really scary, most of us haven't been taught how to do it. So it's quite natural that we get nervous when we're met with an opportunity to feedback. So if you need to kind of get a little background before you practice, then there's a section on theory. But if you're ready to just jump in and practice, then I guess I've curated some of my favorite practices for you to try.
I love that. And going on to your playbook, because obviously you launched it just the back end of last year, and it is one of the most just a fantastic resource that you've created, Mark, with all of these patterns in it and these resources that you've kind of collected. What inspired you to create this playbook and this resource for people to go away and play with? What was your light bulb moment of, I need to make this for people?
Yeah, that's it. I can answer that really easily. because the idea comes from, and I know she's been a guest on here. I really enjoyed your episode with Lisa Gill. And of course, she has a podcast as well. And one of her guests was Amy Edmondson. Mm. So Amy Edmondson coined the term psychological safety 20 or perhaps more like 30 years ago now. I don't know exactly when. And yeah, it's a really great episode. And she speaks a lot about psychological safety, of course, and then also the future of work. Mm-hmm. Right at the end, I think Lisa might ask her, what's next? And Amy Edmondson mentions a playbook. And I thought, what a great idea. And I guess I waited, and then I didn't see it, so I might have missed it, and I apologize. But yeah, I guess the idea came from the wonderful conversation between Lisa Gill and Amy Edmondson, and I thought, yeah, that'd be really helpful. And what I wanted to do was, like I said, you know, break down, have a section on theory so that you can learn about it, and then have a section on practices. And a kind of 101 section as well. So it took so long to compile. Really, it's just a curation of what's out there already. Some of the practices or the steps are my own, but mostly it's you know, because as we mentioned at the beginning of our chat, everyone in this world is so generous. So having kind of chosen my patterns, I knew where to turn to kind of get really great resources, help people to understand those patterns a little further, and then when they're feeling comfortable, to practice certain structures.
It's the most, like, I think I was on your launch when you did the webinar launching it, and the first thing that came in my head when I was hearing you go through all of it was just, I was just thinking to myself, I wish this had been available so long ago, because there were so many great pieces that you brought together. And, you know, I'm sure you've found this as well. You know, you kind of often go off down a rabbit hole of certain practices or certain themes. But actually, it's kind of curating some of those pieces that when you're fresh to it, it's going, oh, actually, this is a really great kind of, like, you know, 101 of starting here, and then this is how to play with it. So I just found it just fantastic, and I've you know, recommended it to so many people, and I put it out in my email newsletter as, like, something I really want everyone to go and look at, because I was just like, you know, when people come to me and talk about some of these ideas, these big ideas about self-management or
you know, all those kind of things that feel so big, and it's so, oof, that feels like a big thing to talk about and to take us on that journey. But here you are saying, well, let's play with one of these experiments and see how that works. And it's just like, you know, look at this resource as something of playing with something like this, rather than seeing it as really big kind of ominous journey that we have to go on.
Yeah, because it's, I guess it was about 8 years ago that I first worked in an organization that was playing around with this stuff. And back then, it was about a year after Frederick Laloux's book, Reinventing Organizations, which was a bit of a starting point for, I think, many of us who are now in this world. And back then, that was the main book. It was quite simple. There was Reinventing Organizations, and there was the Corporate Rebels blog. and since then, there's been an explosion of books and blogs and podcasts, which is fantastic. And it's also overwhelming for newcomers. So yeah, my hope was to create something where people could arrive fresh to the topic and have it make a little bit of sense. Be able to make sense of it quite quickly. So the 101 section has 2-3 hours worth of content in there, and if you work through that, it's a pretty good intro to this world. And then when you're ready to focus on one of the patterns some of the patterns with your team, you can kind of jump in. Yeah. Yeah, jump in wherever you feel the need to. On whatever pattern you feel you need to focus on.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's just such a vital resource that we've been missing for such a while in terms of, you know, accessibility as well, making something instantly accessible, and for it to make sense in a much more tangible way.
And I that was a big aim for it to be accessible and not to scare not to turn people away, because there's a lot of different seasoning, which is great. It makes for a really rich, really rich world that we're in. But I guess people like different flavors, right? Yeah. And so, like, I can't stand mushrooms. I'll pick them out and I won't order them if they're on the menu, and I'll be sad if my meal contains mushrooms. I can't stand them. So we can really be turned off by certain stuff. And I think there's, it might be some people like to lead with complexity, which is it's quite a boffin's world, isn't it? I love it. I studied it back at university. So I'm completely, borderline obsessed with it. But I realized that I don't appreciate the language that's used in that world by some of the kind of complexity pinups, because it's really hard to access, really hard to access. And I find that frustrating. So I didn't want to litter it with academic language or complexity speak or, you know, other seasoning in our world is, and I guess, some of the org psychology stuff can be it's super helpful, but it can also be quite academic. And then other corners of our world like to sprinkle new age seasoning and great. I live in Bristol. There's plenty of that. But I know it's mushrooms to some people, right? Yeah. So it's going to turn some people away. So I wanted it to be free of anything that might, have people turn their nose up or scare them away.
Definitely. I totally can understand that, because like you say, it is such a rich world that we sort of work within, and there are so many ways of doing it as well, and everyone's got their different approach and everyone's got their different experience. And so, like you say, sometimes it can be kind of tainted with a certain perspective of like, oh no, this is the absolutely the way you have to do it, and you know, you can't at all veer off this way, because then you'll be in like no man's land and no one can save you from there. Whereas it's like, well no, actually, you know, you've just got to find what fits for you. And it's, you know, it's like all of us, you know, we, there are certain, whether it's diets or clothes or anything, we all have our certain belief system and our ideals that we want to kind of fit in with. I think that's the same sometimes in this way of working. There can be a very dogmatic way of approaching things. And actually what we need to be is a lot more holistic and saying, oh, is this actually for me?
Yeah, yeah. Dogmatic is the word that was on the tip of my tongue as well. Yeah, yeah. It's one of my favourite books. It's not on org design or culture or ways of working at all. It's actually an international development book. And lucky for me, I studied under the author about 20 years ago, and Samir Raihani. The book is called Complex Systems Theory and Development Practice, which doesn't sound as accessible as it is. It's a brilliant book. And Sammy, yeah, Samir Raihani, we used to call him Uncle Sammy. Wonderful man. He's from Baghdad in Iraq. Sadly, he retired soon after I was studying, which was almost 20 years ago. And back then, we didn't have YouTube and we didn't have podcasts yet. So he's not really a feature of the internet, which is such a shame, because he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And so, the book was all about international development and how do nations develop, and kind of popular wisdom from World Bank and IMF was, you know, okay, you know, we must transition towards liberal democracies, you know, with or without force, and Sammy used to describe that as window dressing, and I kind of see a real parallel there between, you know. So they talk about international political economies, and I won't go into it, but you know, the three kind of core ones are socialism, mercantilism, and liberalism, which are really, I mean, you could say you could choose three of the trends in org development. And Sammy didn't really have any time for those. He was like, they're just labels. And even if a nation might identify as, you know, liberal, or, you know, or an organization might identify as agile, they're still going to borrow from the other, those other labels. And he said, really, it's just window dressing. And we're much better to focus on what he calls the evolutionary, struggle to say this word, evolutionary stable strategies. Ooh. Or in other words, patterns. So what are the patterns that nations should focus on, forgetting about the window dressing? And it's things like nutrition and early years learning, clean water. And I kind of took that approach with the playbook to some extent, and I called him last year, and because I was like, am I being too naive here in just sort of like lifting your approach and taking it from a nation and applying it to an organization? And happily he said, no, that makes sense.
You're like, you.
Yeah, exactly. Because an organization like a nation is complex. It's a complex adaptive system, so we can't treat it as a predictable, something that is predictable.
I love that you're kind of exploring this idea of complexity now, because I must admit, I'd never really kind of, aside from obviously having that understanding that, you know, organizations are complex systems, I've never sort of dived into complexity as you are at the moment. And I know, so I think I got one of your email newsletters. It's like, does anyone have any more resources on complexity? And I'd love for you to kind of share with us, you know, what is it that, why is complexity such a vital piece of this puzzle to make progress on these new ways of working?
I wish I could answer that question better than I'm about to. That's my focus this year, to be able to answer this question well. And I don't blame you for not diving into complexity. Because for all that it's become a buzzword, and I remember Sammy saying 20 years ago, complexity will become a social metaphor, and it has. But I don't think most people, and this isn't a criticism, I don't think when people use the word, I think we often lack an understanding of what it means. So. Another way to frame it is kind of, you know, predictable and unpredictable. So if you can kind of see them as realms, there is a kind of a predictable realm, a predictable world, and an unpredictable world. In the predictable world, which is kind of linear, then, you know, often things like watches are used as an example. Industrial assembly lines. And then the most complicated, or one of the more complicated examples of a linear system, is rocket science. And yeah, it's interesting because my partner is essentially a rocket scientist or a space engineer, so we both don't really understand the other person's world at all. A lot of engineers really struggle in accepting that there is an unpredictable world, because yeah. All of their training is about this predictable realm, and they can do things as cool as send rockets carrying satellites up into space to do nifty stuff like monitor climate change and provide broadband for Africa. It's astonishing what we can do. But that doesn't mean that we can kind of predict and control everything. So, you know, the first few attempts to get into space, you know, well, there were lots of explosions along the way. It didn't all go to plan as we were learning how to do this. But once people, you know, once the boffins and the rocket scientists had figured it out, well, I mean, look at SpaceX and what they do. It's astonishing. But when you take a team, which feels as though it should be a bit more straightforward than rocket science, a team or an organization is not predictable. We, you know, the cause doesn't necessarily equal effect, and there are surprises with our teams. You know, we never get the forecasting right in our organizations because it's not a linear system, but we treat our organizations and our teams as if they were linear, and this causes problems. You know, so we might have meetings in a certain way, and yeah, the problems that causes that people don't contribute. We're not accessing the collective, you know, brain. We're not hearing all voices. And then with decision making, you know, the kind of a linear idea. It's to have all the power at the top. That's kind of like, you know, linear thinking. Yeah, have all the power at the top, and if you trace it back, it goes to Frederick Wilmslow Taylor, one of the first organizational consultants, and back then you split the thinkers and the doers on the industrial assembly line, and it made some sense to have people at the top of the hierarchy doing the thinking, and then all the workers on the factory floor doing the doing. But we don't work in, you know, most people are not working on the factory floor anymore. So that, while that made sense in the industrial revolution, it no longer makes sense now. And the world and our organizations have become more complex, way more complex. So treating our organizations as linear entities, which we do, causes problems and kind of patterns, or anti-patterns, if you will, like, you know, very little feedback. Once a year, if you're lucky, you know, lots and lots and lots of meetings that go on for a long time, and we hear from the same voices. Decisions taken at the top by people who are far, far away from the information. And if we have an understanding that our organizations are complex and not linear, then those traditional ways of working suddenly make a lot less sense. Yeah.
It is. It's changing that way of thinking, isn't it, for people? Because everything is so rigid and overly structured, so much so in a lot of organizations. And I've often said to people, it's almost like there's this blueprint that people keep reproducing in businesses, and they forget that actually, you know, well, with this idea of adaptation and agility, we can create our own systems and structures that are much more beneficial to what we actually need it to be, rather than kind of copying this blueprint that keeps happening in businesses. I always liken it whenever I'm working with startups that are kind of in that growth period. You know, they've started off with this mindset of agility, but then for some reason they kind of get it in their head that they need to be like this grown-up business and start doing all these like really like bureaucratic procedures. And I'm like, where did you get it in your head that you need to act like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I guess if they're kind of small startups between 5 and maybe 12, and there's not a huge necessity, particularly if you're around about the 5 mark, for lots of structure. But then as you grow, then there, you know, you need to have a little bit of structure. You've got a choice. Okay, well, which do I want to be copy the traditional ways of working, or do I want to accept that complexity conscious, as it's called in Aaron Dignan's book Brave New Work? Do I accept that organizations that whose ways of working accept that our organizations are complex? There's that decision to make. And I guess that in my first experience of self-management, we were grappling with that. So the organization had grown from 5 to close to 30, and somewhere along that journey the default reaction was just to bring in some middle managers and to kind of, you know, organize in a traditional hierarchical fashion. And quite soon it became clear that wasn't, it just didn't feel as good for people were not happy in their work anymore. And always reminds me of that statistic by Gallup: 85% of us are disengaged at work, a well-worn statistic that we kind of trot out routinely. But for me, that's the problem. That's the problem that this stuff, alternative ways of working are trying to solve. And the kind of default by the organization that I was in that had grown from a small kind of startup size to something a bit bigger was to introduce that layer of management. And then when it didn't work, and it really didn't work, the boss began reading lots of books about Spotify and Netflix and Maverick and then reinventing organizations. And then we decided collectively, that was my first experience of consent decision making, which is one of my favorite practices. We decided to give it a go. Yeah, let's try and organize in the way that some of those case studies do. Of course, not copying them, because, you know, if the world of organizations were linear, then go ahead, copy and paste. That will work. But of course, it's not. We had to kind of figure it out and be inspired by some of those case studies and some of those ways of working that we'd read about in reinventing organizations, but beware not to copy them.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, thank you so much for diving into that for us, Mark. That was just, it really shed some light on it, I think, as well, for those that maybe aren't complexity conscious, as you said there. So where can we, is there anything people can be directed to find more that you're sharing? Obviously your playbook, Mark, but is there anything else that you're working on that we should be aware of?
So you can take a look at my playbook on my website, which is marco.work/playbook. The other thing that you can take a look at is my newsletter. So roughly once a month, sometimes more, I like to send something out, and it's usually something quite practical. So for example, I had a series called Do Try This at Work, and it would be things like, so I've mentioned already one of my favorite things that progressive organizations or organizations that want to be progressive can try is consent decision making. And there's something called brain friendly feedback that I really, really, really like. And so I'd kind of write and send out a video on that and the steps that you can follow, or circle meetings. They're like training wheels for consent decision making, and, you know, a bit of a hack for psychological safety. So I'm an enormous fan of those. It wasn't until I sat in many circles that I learned to be a half decent listener. So I really, really recommend those. They're so simple and effective. Yeah, so you can sign up for my newsletter, and you can take a peek at my my playbook at marco.work. And also I run a course, it's been four times a year for the last couple of years. So you can have a peek at that if you like. But really, I mean, if you're up for giving stuff a go, you can kind of ignore the course and just try some stuff, you know, learn the theory through the playbook, and then head to the practice section and try some things with your team.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mark. It has been so enlightening, and I've really enjoyed us exploring this together.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Lizzie.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.